Dear friends, good evening.
Good evening. Oh dear.
What's happened? I mean, I came 10,000 miles and you give me such a lousy response. Good evening. Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you so very much. Thank you to the children who welcomed me with purple balloons, Episcopal color. Thank you for inviting me to come here. Thank you, and heartiest congratulations to the parish of the Transfiguration on its jubilee. I think they deserve a clap, don't you? I hope you won't be much like the little girl, the daughter of a priest who said, "Daddy, why is it that just before you preach, you fall on your knees?" And Daddy said, "Darling, I'm asking God to help me preach a good sermon." And little darling, like a short, asked, "And why doesn't he?" But thank you so very much as well for the wonderful support that you have given to Happy Homes. It is wonderful. And I also did want to say that today we are free in South Africa. But the victory that we won over the ghastliness of apartheid is something that would not have happened without the extraordinary support that we international community pray for us. People ready to go to jail on our behalf, people boycotting South African goods, and eventually we got this spectacular victory over the awfulness of apartheid. And even 12 years down the line is being able to say, on behalf of millions and millions of our people back home, thank you so very much for helping us to become free. Now, I should really have wanted to clap you, but if I did it all on my own, people would say, "Well, we always did think, I mean, that there was a screw loose in that guy's head." So I discovered that I, in fact, had a magic wand, because I know, I mean, that you are shy and reserved and so forth. Now, this wand, when I wave it over people, does an extraordinary thing. It turns you into instant South Africans. So I wave my wand and I say, "Fellow South Africans, let us give these Americans a real humdinger of an applause. Come on, let's do that." Thank you. Oh, I've got to remember, yes. I wave it over you and you revert to your normal shy selves. I have to be very careful, actually, about this, asking people to clap and so on, because on one occasion I was with a group of Australian young people, and I said, you know, the trouble with us is that we don't celebrate who we are. How about giving ourselves a warm hand? And they nearly took the roof off. And then I said, how about giving God a standing ovation? Wow. Did they? And when they finished, without thinking, I said, thank you. Now, one of the things that happens when you grow older, as I have, as you can see, is you get to be very repetitive. You might have heard the story of the brilliant scientist who gave a scintillating address, very abstruse and learned. It was the same address. Mercifully, he was giving it at different venues. So one day he says to his driver, "Oh man, I'm tired. I know this is a very good lecture, but I'm getting bored listening to myself." And the driver says, "You know what? I've been listening to you all these many, many nights, and I know your lecture word for word." And the professor says, "Oh, you're kidding." He says, "Try me." And the driver really goes to town and delivers word perfect. So they decide, no, they are going to switch places. The professor becomes the driver, and the driver becomes professor. But they agree, you see, that he will speak just long enough not to allow for questions afterwards. And the first evening comes, and the driver turned professor gets up, and he really performs scintillatingly well. Unfortunately, he does leave a little bit of time. And as always, there are those people who like to trip up speakers, and somebody asks a convoluted question. And the driver turned professor says, "Oh, is that all? Even my driver there at the back can answer such a simple question." In the Genesis account of the beginning times, a wonderful attribute of those stories is how it reflects a wonderful harmony in the garden. Adam has all of these animals, and everything really is lovely in the garden. The lion gambols with a lamb. No bloodshed. Not even for religious sacrifice, because everyone in the garden is vegetarian. And Adam is okay, you know, I mean, he's happy. But God looks and says, no, not really. He's not in the seventh heaven of delight. And God says, "It is not good for man to be alone. So God says, well, Adam, and says, hi. How about choosing a mate from one of the animals? And God lets them pass in procession in front of Adam, and God says, what about this one? He says, nope. And this one? Not on your life. And then God says, well, I've got it. And so God puts Adam to sleep, and from his rib produces this delectable creature, Eve. And when Adam awakes, he says, wow, this is just what the doctor ordered. Well, it is a charming story, but it speaks of very profound truths about us, that none of us comes fully formed into the world. I wouldn't know how to walk as a human being. I wouldn't know how to speak as a human being. I wouldn't know how to be a human being except through learning all of these from other human beings. I need you so that I can be me. And in our African culture, we've got something they call Ubuntu, where we say a person is a person through other persons. That we are, in fact, made for togetherness. We are made for complementarity. You see, I have gifts that you don't have, and you have gifts that I don't have. And you can almost see God rubbing God's hands and saying, voila. Now that is why I created you different, so that you would know your need of one another, that you are dependent one on the other. A solitary human being is a contradiction in terms. You can't be fully human all on your lonesome. And so the story says, in the beginning times, God intended for there to be harmony, for there to be friendship, togetherness, that we were made to live in a delicate network of interdependence. And so we would be friends with God, who can come down and have a stroll in our garden. So close is God. And we are in a warm relationship of harmony with the rest of creation. And then this was shattered when sin intervened. And you note what sin does. It splits apart. It introduces alienation. And so Adam and Eve hide from God. There no longer is that happy relationship between them. And we learned very well, didn't we, how to pass the buck. Adam, why? What have you done? Why did you do what I said you shouldn't do? No, God, no. It's the woman you gave me, God. And God says, Eve, Yes, God. Yes, God. Didn't I tell you? Who? What? Now, why did you do this? No, God. No. It's not my fault. It's not my fault. It's the snake. Forever we have taken after our first parents. How good we are at passing the buck. Nobody has ever got down to telling us what the snake said. But you notice sin alienating, breaking apart, centrifugal, running away from the center. And you can go on and you look at the next story, is the story of the Tower of Babel. And again there is a dispersal, a splitting apart, a breaking of community when human beings can no longer communicate. They can't understand each other. And then God said, hey, now, whatever got into me to create that lot? I think I've got to go back to the drawing board. But no, ultimately God says, yeah, I took a risk, and I think it's a risk worth taking. I think we've got to do something about setting right this. And so God sends God's Son. And you notice, at the time of his crucifixion, one of the things that happens is they say, the curtain in the temple was torn from top to bottom. It may not have happened. But what they were really wanting to say is, Jesus has now achieved a reversal of what happened in the garden, in that garden, that first garden, where there was a split between God and human beings. And now the curtain is drawn apart, and God and human beings are coming together. Hey? So it's that, the God project is bringing the splintered parts together. And you read the account of the first Pentecost, which is the feast of the ingathering, the harvesting. It is the ingathering of all of those who were scattered all over the place, who could no longer form human community because they couldn't understand one another. They come from all over, and they can understand, each in their own language. This coming together. That the chief characteristic of Christ's work is reversing the ghastly tragedy that happened then. Do you remember what Jesus said to Mary Magdalene? In the garden after his resurrection? No, I'm not going to ask you to give me the answer, eh? you wouldn't want to behave like one of the students was asked a question. What did John the Baptist say to Jesus when Jesus came to him to be baptized? Now you know what John the Baptist said, but this student didn't know. But then he said, what's a little ignorance between friends, you kind of thing? And he said, John the Baptist said, remember, you are the Son of God and behave like one. Now, I want to remind you what Jesus says to Mary Magdalene. Jesus says, go and tell, and he doesn't say, go and tell my disciples. He doesn't say, go and tell my friends. And remember, he had said, I no longer call you servants, I call you friends. He doesn't call them, he doesn't say, go and tell my friends. Quite shatteringly, Jesus says, go and tell my brothers. My brothers. These guys, one of whom betrayed him, another denied him, not once, three times. And then they all ran away. Phew! If that had happened to me, I know the choice language I would have used about them. I mean, the old so-and-sos. Jesus doesn't say this. Jesus says, go and tell my brothers that I am ascending to my God and your God, to my Father and your Father. Incredible. It must have been that Jesus was really serious. This was a very, very solemn moment. And so, what is this all about? I discovered hey, these are some of the most radical words Jesus could ever have uttered, if not the most radical. Jesus was saying, hey, we are family. Now that sounds very sentimental. Family. Family. Yeah, Jesus says, we're family. You remember when Paul went to Damascus, he was still Saul. And that, whatever happened on the road to Damascus, our Lord then appears to Ananias and he says, Ananias, and Ananias says, I'm here, Lord. Ananias, please just go to the house of whoever. There's this man, Saul. Go. And Ananias says, what? You can't be serious. I mean, do you know why this guy came here? He's talking to the omniscient God, the one who knows everything. He said, do you know why this guy came here? He came to clobber us. And you say, I must go and do what? And Jesus says, just go. And you remember what Ananias says. When he steps in, he says, Saul, my brother. Saul, my brother, this one who was arch persecutor and had come to sow mayhem in Damascus. Brother, 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 brother. Because Jesus came into a world that was thoroughly stratified. Jew, Samaritan, Gentile. Pharisee, Sadducee, you name it. It was a splintered society, slave free, and the usual other distinctions, male, female, young, old, rich, poor. And you remember what St. Paul says, speaking about the consequences of what Jesus had achieved. There is now no longer Jew nor Greek. There is no longer rich or poor. There is no longer male nor female. And you could add and add and go. That this is the characteristic of the church. And so they can speak of Jesus as the one who broke down the middle wall of partition in the old Jewish temple. The wall that separated the Gentile court from the sanctuary. That where others put up boundaries, Jesus is the one who knocks them down. Where others disperse, Jesus embraces. We are family. Family. And family. You don't choose who is going to be your brother or your sister. Sometimes we wish we could. But you see, we are each God's gift to one another. That there's no way we can ever repudiate one another. Ever. There are no outsiders in this family. Eh? Jesus describing his coming crucifixion says, I, if I be lifted up, will draw. Jesus didn't say, I will draw some. No, he didn't say, I will draw some. Jesus says, I, if I be lifted up, will draw all. Wonderful hymn that we started out with, speaking about God's embrace. All. Hey. All. You understand that? All. That there is no outsider. Everyone is an insider. And did you discover? God has no enemies. Huh? No, man, God, your standards are low. I mean, you mean this guy belongs here? God says, yeah. Can you believe it? Right, okay. Let's just try and enumerate a few things and let's show just how radical this is. All black, white, yellow, red, rich, poor, beautiful, not so beautiful. All. Clever, not so clever. All. All. Bush. Bin Laden. Bin Laden, Saddam Hussein, huh? All, Palestinian, Israeli, Jew, Lebanese, in Northern Ireland, Roman Catholic, Protestant, we all, all belong in this family. Gay, lesbian, so-called straight. All. Incredible. All. You see how radical that is? No outsiders. And you know the ethic of family. In the ethic of family, you don't say, oh, baby. Mm-mm. You contribute absolutely nothing to the family budget. Nothing. You might sometimes give us odd smells, but I mean, no. Baby, which family would say, baby, you are therefore going to receive only in proportion to what you put in. Baby, oh. Baby gets all the love and caring. No contribution that we can see. No, that's not true, actually. I have 7 grandchildren. And they really are quite something. I had an operation and I couldn't walk. I was sliding. And one of the kids thought, granddad is doing this for my entertainment. So here I'm sliding painfully. And she does the same behind me. And she's sliding along. Incredible. I mean, we just had our newest grandchild, about 7 months old. Her older sister is 9 years. And so we see, Now, this is a great surprise. And the mother says, to you, yes. But just, I mean, the incredible joy that the child can feel in a home. You don't say in a healthy family, granny, tough luck. You know, the bottom line. No. The ethic of family is from each according to their ability, to each according to their need. Now apply that globally. How, in the name of everything that is good, can we who are family spend as much as we do, obscene amounts, on weapons of death and destruction? Eh? In what we call defense budget. And we know, all of us know, that a minute fraction of those budgets everywhere in the world would ensure that God's children, my sisters and brothers, your sisters and brothers, would have clean water to drink, would have enough to eat, would have adequate health care, would have decent homes, would have. And you see, family, we belong together. Didn't Martin Luther King Jr. say, unless we learn to live together as, he said, brothers, but I'm sure he would have, if it was these days, he would have added sisters and sisters, we will perish together as fools. And it's obvious. We won't win wars against terror. No. Never. We won't. As long as there are conditions in the world that make people desperate. Hey? God says, hey, the only way we can ever be safe and secure is together. The only way we can be free is together. The only way we can be human is together. Almost everything we experience conspires to separate and break apart them, us, the God project. Is to say, we belong together. Now, I'm finishing. Aren't you lucky? I mean, I'm finishing. How about becoming a center of serenity? You become a center of serenity. You become a pool of peace. You and let its ripples flew out. I'm going to ask you, how about closing your eyes? Let's close our eyes. I am a pool of serenity. You, each one of us is a pool of serenity. And I let go ripples of this serenity and peace and compassion. I'm letting it go. Let it flow out of this place like the healing waters in the temple that Ezekiel saw. And that we find in the revelation of St. John the Divine. Let the ripples of serenity flow out into God's world. And then take just one person. The person maybe you don't like. Yes, maybe you hate. Either here or elsewhere in the world. Take that person. Hold them up before the throne of grace, of love, of compassion, of goodness, of gentleness, of light.